Hello again, it's Adam from Roofer 24 with my 21st now stop off of my Welcome to Scotland series. It's unbelievable that I think we're almost up to halfway on our tour of the Scottish leagues. It's been a great journey so far, and I've got another great episode for you tonight. Well, first of all, I've got two guests. I'm going to introduce to both of them separately because they come from slightly different aspects of life. First of all, I'm going back to kind of my Ukrainian roots to welcome Chris. Evening, Chris. How are you doing over there, mate?
Hi, Adam. Yeah, very well. Thank you. Very well. Staying safe is the important thing. But thanks very much for having me on. Avid admirer of the Ukrainian content, of course. It's great to finally have a chat with you.
Same here, likewise. Me and Chris have known each other from the British Ukrainian football circles for a while now. But Chris, would you say Clyde's your first love, or is Ukrainian football your first love? Now, you've got to be careful how you answer that tonight, of course.
Hand on my heart, because I actually have the Clyde tattooed above my heart. So, yeah, it's gotten to be Clyde. But I've had my moments with Dinamo and Karpaty, shall we say.
Of course, as we all have. And also, real welcome to Paul Shanks, host of the Clyde FC podcast. Paul, how are you over there today?
I'm great, Adam. Thanks very much for asking, and thanks for inviting me on. Looking forward to talking all things Billy Wee with you.
Billy Wee, all right then.
Billy Wee, yeah. Throwing the nickname in already. Just thought we'd go 250 lunge straight to nicknames.
Oh, superb. I like the way you've kicked it off there. So what's the nickname about then?
Nobody really knows, to be quite honest with you, Adam. There's a couple of theories. The main one that seems to get the most traction is that it was around the Victorian era where bully meant good or a kind of positive inclination rather than somebody that was stealing your lunch money at school. Mm-hmm. And we, just with ourselves, maybe being one of the smaller clubs in Glasgow, and it just kind of got, we were the Bully Wee Clyde, the good wee team Clyde. So that seems to be the, as I say, the one with the most traction.
Ah, fair enough.
Now, there's a couple of other theories.
Go on.
There was one involving two Frenchmen, a Clyde game many years ago. This seems quite not believable, if I'm honest. One, I think somebody scored and it was disallowed, and one of them said to the other, "Boat e wee," which means their goal, yes. And someone at the club overheard the conversation, and they kept saying it over and over, "Boat e wee, bully wee, bully wee." But to be honest, I'm not sure that's entirely accurate. I mean, this is probably the 1920s or something like that. So.
I quite like the fact it could be two Frenchmen have sort of redirected Clyde's path there. That's quite a nice notion.
Frenchmen, taking in Scottish football in the east end of Glasgow in the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, I think it's quite a romantic notion about it. I like that.
I certainly do. Paul, though, before we really dig into the club, though, podcast, yeah. How did it all get started? You know, how long have you been going?
Well, it's still in its infancy, to be honest, Adam. It came about, try and claw this from my memory. It was around, I would say, September, maybe late August, and obviously there was no football at the time. And one of the club's associate directors, who's also a good friend of mine, Ian Fitzpatrick, he's a big believer in social media and the influence and positive influence that can have in a football club. And he had been looking into maybe setting up something to do, kind of podcast, and he wanted it to make it official. He sent me a WhatsApp. I went, "Oh, that sounds great." And then he went, "Oh, that's good, because I'm going to get you to host it." And I went, oh all right, okay. What? And then that was basically it. Now, from that, it snowballed pretty quickly as the season started to draw ever closer when we restarted back in October now. We run our podcast through a kind of multimedia company called A State of Mind. And I believe that the club, another one of the associate directors, knew the person who runs this multimedia company, as I say. And they just basically got talking. And yeah, the Paul at A State of Mind said, yeah, we'd be delighted to have an official club podcast on board. His own book is expanding. He's got lots of different kind of podcasts from music, football. He's won awards for, I think it's a Celtic State of Mind. Was up against Liverpool's official one and a few other kind of big UK football podcasts back in 2018. So we just leave everything to him. All we do is pretty much like I've done here. I join the studio, the online platform, and I talk away about Clyde for an hour. Bit difficult of late because there's not been much football to talk about. So we've had a wee bit of an impromptu break again, sadly, but it's going well. We now do, it's a live podcast every Friday at 7 p.m. That's streamed over YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter as well. And it's we're doing, the audience is increasing week on week, and we're still trying to find the right balance as the kind of content of what people want, because we don't just want it to be Clyde fans watching. We obviously want it to be Clyde-centric, obviously, with the Clyde FC podcast, but we want it to be interesting enough that if you support, I'm going to say Forfar, because believe it or not, we've had Forfar fans watching it. And I was like, wait, what? It was like, Loon, whatever the year was, they were founded down the comments bar on YouTube. And I was like, what's going on here? And it's really good. And you do get, obviously, like, Partick Thistle fans, who will come to them later, obviously, with the rivalry. They come on and they're giving it big licks and all sorts. But it's really good. It's interesting. It's not something that, if you'd asked me this time last year, would you see yourself doing a podcast? Probably would have laughed in your face, to be honest, and walked away.
quite right there as well. I mean, it's one of the, shall we say, positive legacies of all this sort of lockdown misery that we're going through, is that the sort of football communities have developed this, through the podcast medium, the way to still get the communication and the banter going and the rivalry going and the laughs and the giggles going. And it's the way it's kind of naturally grown has been a great thing to see. But as you say, though, Partick rivalry we will come on to, but Chris, just for people listening, where is Clyde, literally, geographically speaking, now? And where has it come from? Because I got confused my entire life until I researched for this episode.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that our geographical home grounds have been here, there and everywhere for the last, 140-odd years. So currently, since 1994, Clyde have been playing at Broadwood Stadium in Cumbernauld. Cumbernauld's been a fairly new town. I think it was around the 1950s that it got its town status, and then it was built and developed, etc. That's where I'm now.
Whereabouts is that, though? Just for people outside of Scotland, like who perhaps don't know where it is.
It's around 10, 15 miles outside of Glasgow.
Okay.
It's not a million miles away. You're talking 20 minutes in the car from Glasgow City Centre.
Cool.
So then from before, we were at Shawfield Stadium from the 1920s, I think, up until 1986. Turn of the century, yeah. So the vast majority of Clyde's life was at Shawfield Stadium in Rutherglen. Before then, were our kind of main born roots, if you like. It was at Barrowfield Park, in the East End, not too far from Celtic Park. That's where we were founded. That's where we played our first couple of decades before moving to Sheffield.
Okay. So you were based in Glasgow then, first of all, before sort of moving out in the 90s in those areas. Just so I understand as well. Now, of course, we're all young gentlemen in the room tonight, so we won't have too many memories of Sheffield, but there must be stories that still do the terraces today of what it was like back at the old stadium. Just what was it like back there, or you know, what any kind of legacy that the stadium has for Clyde today?
Well, I've heard a few stories, but I'm not sure they're broadcastable on a family show.
Who says it's a family show?
Let's say it's for events in the terraces rather than on the pitch.
Come on then, give us your worst. Come on, Paul, I can see you're eager at it.
No, I'm keeping out this, just in case the club are watching.
All right, something family friendly.
I think the main sort of thing about Sheffield is obviously number one, the running track, because Sheffield is, I believe to this day, still a Greyhound track. They still do the Greyhound racing there. And so with the Greyhounds, I've got the big tote board. That's a sort of, I don't know, specific thing when people talk about Sheffield in the old days, etc. Fans of other clubs, they will say the big board behind the goal. But yeah, I mean, you can still visit.
There's some great pictures, Adam. If you search for it, it's like Clyde's last game, say on Google Images, and there's a great picture, I think it's of the scoreboard, just as we scored a fourth goal that day. It was the very last game, as I say, and the kind of tote board that Chris is talking about is in the background. And it was Sheffield's Eiffel Tower.
Okay.
But like it was Sheffield's kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but yeah, that was the one thing that would probably draw you the second you walked in would be that. Yeah.
I have to ask then, obviously, with the move out of Glasgow, what was the impact for the club? How did the supporter base and the like change there?
I mean, after we left Sheffield, there was a bit of the club was almost in a state of emergency, for want of a better word. We were homeless. It was as simple as that. So for 5 years, we ground shared with Partick at Firhill, which, as you can imagine, on both sides, didn't go down particularly well. And by the end, it probably pushed some of our fan base away, in the sense that they just didn't want to go there because of it being Partick Thistle's ground. I mean, you wouldn't ask Rangers to go and ground share with Celtic. It's not the same scale. Now, granted, it's not the same scale, but we're not exactly friends, right? And then after then, there was a bit of a limbo because Broadwood had been kind of commissioned to be built by the council in the area in Cumber Road, North Lanarkshire. So there was a kind of 2-year period where we were out of Firhill and we moved into Hamilton Academicals old ground, Douglas Park. It was at the time. So we were there for 2 years just until Broadwood was ready for business. And then, yeah, as Chris mentioned, since 1994,
February 94, yep, you're right.
We played our first game at Broadwood, ironically against previous Rents, who cuffed us 2-0. So cheers for that, Ackies. That was just swell.
Thanks for that one. Nice little housewarming for you there.
I think just to sum Clyde up, We moved to Broadwood, as Paul said. We played Hamilton, got beat 2-0. There was a huge crowd. Broadwood at the time only had the two stands.
Yeah, 6,000 capacity at the time. It was fantastic.
And I think it took us 5 or 6 games before we actually scored. at Broadwood. Never mind win a game. So I think the Cumbernauld community kind of thought, well, no, this is, they're not going to do. And I've never been back since.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of nomadic nature kind of got us the nickname the Gypsy Army. And I think that was the media that kind of gave us that. I'm not aware that it was our own fans. I think it was actually the press nicknamed as the Gypsy Army because we were always on the move. And it did have an effect on the fan base, I think. And there was hope that when we moved to Cumbernauld, a town of circa, say, 50,000 at that time, that we could try and grow and enhance the support and have a successful team, first and foremost, to do that. But, yeah, as Chris mentioned, we didn't score until like our fourth or fifth game in the new stadium, and we promptly get relegated from the first division at the time, at the end of that season. So it wasn't the best of starts. And I think it's fair to say that the club didn't do enough at the time, and they held their hands up for a good while after we moved to Cumbernauld. There wasn't enough in the way of interaction with the community or trying to engage fans or new fans. And that's probably been the legacy of the move to Cumbernauld, I would say, is that the support remained quite static. We probably lost some from moving out of Glasgow. We did pick up a fan base from Cumbernauld, but it probably done nothing more than balance the books.
Just to add a point there, Paul. I went to the high school just across the road from Broadwood, and this was at the time when Clyde were in Division One. We were competing. We finished regularly in mid table. In the old Division One, and at that time Clyde were selling season tickets to under 16s for, was it a fiver, £10, something like that. It was nothing, basically. And as I said, I was going to the local high school there, and I don't remember anything. I don't remember anyone from Clyde coming out saying, this deal is on, why don't you come and give it a try? There was absolutely nothing between the club and the local school, which you would expect that would be the first place it would go to try and get young local fans through the turnstiles, and it just never happened. And everybody apart from myself and a handful of others supported Celtic. There's just no Clyde fans there, but the elephant was sort of in the room.
Yeah.
You know, the stadium is there. The team are actually doing not too bad, relatively speaking. But there was just no engagement, and that was really annoying for me, because I could see that Clyde had potential, and we still have potential, I believe. But it just didn't happen, and as I said, it was very disappointing.
Exactly. We tend to just learn from mistakes rather than maybe being proactive in our history. We have shot ourselves in the foot at times with that. And obviously, when we maybe come to discuss more recent years, there's been some pretty significant downturn in our fortunes at points because of that.
Very much so.
I mean, I've got to ask you there, obviously, as you mentioned it, Chris, in Cumbernauld, you know, what is the influence of Celtic and Rangers in the town when it comes to support? And also, what is it with the rivalry with Partick? Where did that start? And is it still as strong today as it was back in the Glasgow days?
Just on the support thing, yeah, I mean, basically everyone in Cumbernauld supports either Celtic or Rangers. But I don't think that's a problem that's just for Cumbernauld. It's the entire length and breadth of Scotland. You know, places like Peterhead, for example, way up in the north of Scotland, they all support Rangers. You know, it's not a problem just for Cumbernauld. People will support. I've always said people will support a winning team. If Clyde are winning and Clyde are progressing well, and the club's doing well, people will go to the matches. That's the be all and end all. You know, Clyde can do all these community stuff from a young age, but when they start going to games and we're getting scalped every week in the second division, it really doesn't matter. They're not going to stick. You know, they're not going to stick with us. In terms of the rivalry with Thistle, there's a couple of stories I've heard regarding our time at Firhill. They were charging, and this is 1986, so they were charging roughly £40,000 a season for rent alone, which back then was, you know, a lot, still is a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and as Paul mentioned earlier, they didn't treat as well. The pitch was an absolute mess. It couldn't hold a match every single week. Our club shop was basically inside a turnstile on Firhill Road. The merchandise that we were selling from the club shop was sold out of bin bags. They just wouldn't allow us any sort of space or anything, any sort of value of the money that we were paying for rent. So there was a lot of sort of anger and resentment towards Thistle for that, even though we're supposed to be grateful for them allowing us to ground share with them in the first place. But yeah, certainly from the fans' point of view, there was a lot of resentment towards them for that. And for these days, for myself personally, the games against Thistle have always been the game of a bit of bite. Mm-hmm. You know, I suppose what a derby should be, you know, players don't like each other, fans don't like each other. The other thing about Thistle is they always bring a really good crowd to Broadwood, and that's something that a lot of teams don't do. But and that just adds to the sort of the spice of the game. There's one good story I remember in the Challenge Cup. This is in the late 90s. There's a guy called... it wasn't Boniface. I think Koke was his name, his surname.
Sammy Cola.
Sammy Cola, that's him, yeah. We played Thistle in a Challenge Cup game. And Alan Maitland. Alan Maitland was the manager at the time. And it was 0-0 at half-time. And the referee came into the Clyde dressing room at half-time and told Alan Maitland to sub him off before he sent him off. He just absolutely tore right into him.
Did they not get booked after something mad, like 26 seconds or something?
Oh, brilliant.
He sent the boy into orbit, and it was beautiful and hilarious and in equal measure. He literally just ended the guy, and he got up and walked away, took the card, and that was it. He was an absolute unit of a boy. He was huge.
Yeah, huge.
He just instantly became just one of those cult heroes. I don't know how many games he played for us after that, but that's the one thing I remember about him.
He must have had a couple of pints with the lads just before the game and was thoroughly briefed about what was expected of him, and he absolutely took the bull by the horns and went right through with it. So if Sammy's watching this or listening to this, then respect.
Thank you.
Oh, I mean, historically, brilliant. Adam, just on the rivalry as well, there was in Clyde's history, probably one of our out with winning the Scottish Cup, our best ever seasons was in 1967, where the club were still part-time, so just as we are now. And we finished third in the Scottish top flight, and that was behind the European Cup winning Celtic team. Rangers finishing second. And I believe we even reached the semi-finals of the Scottish Cup. And it was only the soon-to-be Lisbon Lions that put us out in that. So we also hold the, I want to say the record of being the highest finishing part-time team in Scottish football history, but probably the most recognisable given who actually finished above us. And actually, as a result of that season, we should have qualified for Europe. But our good friends Partick Thistle got in the way, because it was when the UEFA Cup was known as the Fair City Cup?
Mm-hmm. The Fairs Cup,
The Fairs Cup, yep. And as a result, you couldn't have more than one team from one city entering. And our good pals from Maryhill got in instead of us, because it was argued that Sheffield wasn't in Glasgow. They argued that it was out with the city boundary.
Oh, that's a bit cheeky.
Yeah, that was a bit
cheeky indeed.
Unmentionables.
We have, however, played in Europe.
Yep.
There was a...
Now, guys, one of my early... Well, I won't say early, but one of my memories of Clyde was their big push to get back up into the SPL around the turn of the millennium. And there was a whole, I don't want to use the word scandal, but there was a kind of a big fallout from it. Is it my memory playing tricks on me, or what actually happened back then?
So, yeah, it was the 2003-2004 season, if my memory is serving me correctly, where, quite frankly, it was a phenomenal season on the park. We were... always kind of mid-table after a promotion to the first division in 2000. So for a couple of years, we kind of flitted about mid-table. Then we started creeping up, a couple of seasons finishing third. And then it just seemed to click that year. We went on a ridiculous winning run, unbeaten run of 14 or 15 games at the turn of the year. And at one point, we were, I want to say, 12 points clear, albeit I think Inverness had a couple of games in hand. There was a now somewhat infamous match at Somerset away to United, where we were 2-0 up, I think, at half-time, only to blow it, and we drew. And that just seemed to be the catalyst for the remainder of the season. It got really nervy. And then it got to the second last day of the season. We were at home to Inverness Cali Thistle. We had a 2-point lead. And yeah, obviously we won the title. There were issues off the park, which I'll kind of touch upon in a wee minute. But on the park, we had just had to do the business. Even looking probably with a bit of hindsight, a draw would have been enough for us. We were away to all but relegated Brechin in the last day of the season. Inverness had a slightly trickier match at home to St Johnstone. So as the match played out, after 78 minutes, it was 1-1. They had taken the lead. We equalised, I think, through an Ian Harty penalty. But it was very, very nervy. And then they scored not a great deal left on the clock. I've still got memories of the flicked header finding the far corner. And that was that. You just kind of knew the way that the last month had went that season, that it just wasn't going to be our day after all. We went up to Brechin. We thoroughly swept them aside 5-2, including a parting hat-trick for our hero of that season and many other seasons, Pat Keogh, an absolute legend for Clyde fans. And unfortunately, Inverness done the business and got a 3-1 victory, I think it was. They were at one point drawing as well, and you started to think, oh, could it just please, for the love of God, please? But nah, they got the job done, and that was that. So it was one of those instances that I mentioned earlier where the club probably shot ourselves in the foot. Off the field, it was probably our hands were tied to a degree because of the regulations that you had to meet to get into the top flight in Scottish football at that time. So you had to have, for some reason, a 10,000-seater stadium. Now, out with, I don't know, what, five clubs in Scotland. Obviously, your two Glasgow guys and your two Edinburgh clubs in Aberdeen. How many clubs in Scottish football regularly get five figures through the door? But no, you had to have a 10,000-seater stadium. Now, by that point, Broadwood was 8,000 seaters. It was more than enough. It was more than enough for what we needed it for in the first division. We were getting crowds, I'd say probably an average 1,500, 1,600. And that was a core of around, say, 900 to 1,000 Clyde fans. The rest made up from away. And some bigger bumper crowds with, like, a Thistle, Falkirk added in there. But the club had to basically secure some type of ground sharing arrangement again, even on a temporary basis, until we were able to get a fourth stand in place. Now, that's probably where the club's historic issues with our landlords probably kick in. That wasn't really coming forth. And as a result, we had to strike an agreement with Kilmarnock, of all teams, to ground share. Now, that was agreed. But again, you were looking at an insane situation where Clyde Football Club are not going to be playing anywhere close to their home, just in order to fulfil matches. But I think it's more than fair to say that Ayrshire would have been absolutely taking the biscuit for Clyde to be playing a home match from. So that was an unwelcome distraction, I would think.
Most definitely. It was a difficult time. I mean, for me there, you know, I grew up in England and, you know, watched Scottish football from a distance. And Clyde was always one of those teams that you were aware of in the, you know, in the lower leagues. And that year it was like, oh, this could be the first time they, you know, in my lifetime that I would have seen them as a SPL team. So it was a curious one to watch. And I was kind of nodding my head there, remembering the big lead. So it was, yeah.
It's strange looking back on it, because with hindsight, that wonderful thing that it is, it probably saved the club from extinction that they didn't go up.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't know, I've got no idea what the rent or the cost it would have been to hire out Rugby Park, but maybe an extreme comparison, but if you look at Gretna, for their very short time in the top flight in Scottish football, where they were forced to ground share at Motherwell. Now, obviously that's a geographic issue where Gretna are, or where, sorry, compared to any other ground that they could have faced. But I cannot see, for the life of me, Clyde getting 500 or 600 fans down to Rugby Park, even for a top flight game. It's a hell of a long way out. It's not just the outskirts of Glasgow. So I just don't see how it could end well for us.
I agree with you completely. We're going to, as said to you off air, we'll start with the negative of that decade, and now we're going to go with
God,
one of one.
A bit of time to drink.
Yeah, I could see you reaching there, so let's put a smile on your face, guys. And you know, one of those great days for anybody listening who isn't a Man United fan. We all remember Roy Keane disappearing to Celtic, and everyone talking about his debut. And what a great debut he had, gentlemen. Chris, what were your memories of that day?
Just heaven. I mean, I remember talking to my dad a few years ago. We were talking about it, and he says it was really Roy of the Rovers stuff. And even now, I think back and I think there is a good chance that will never, ever happen again. But the day itself, I remember it vividly. I was in second year in high school. I was 13 years old, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And of course, on the way, in the week up to the game, it's, you know, 5-0 this. Because we had played Celtic in the Cup the previous season and had lost 5-0.
Mm.
So it was all this kind of ribbon stuff to be expected, right? And to be honest, I didn't think we had a chance either. But it's just, it was one of those things. And there's actually a good quote from Ian Crocker, the commentator for Sky that day. It's just when the teams were in the tunnel coming out for the start of the match. He'd said with Roy Keane's presence, he's going to attract millions of viewers from, you know, the UK and Ireland and further afield in Europe. And also, they started Do We and Nakamura, which then gave a huge audience from Asia. More about Do We in a minute, by the way. And he said, the world is watching Clyde against Celtic. And for the show that Clyde put on for the world, you know, it was just, it was incredible. And, you know, we won the game 2-1, and it should have been more. It should have been more. Three goals disallowed, we missed a penalty, we hit the post, till Brighton put one just millimetres above the bar. And I'm obviously biased in saying this, but it's probably one of the most one-sided football matches I've ever seen Clyde play. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was against Celtic, the fact that it was in the Cup, the fact that it's Roy Keane and all the circus surrounding it, no one saw it coming, and we just absolutely, we battered them. There's no other way to describe it. And I'm a 20, I will be 28 this week, a 28-year-old single man with no children, so I can say with no worries that that was one of the best days of my life. There's absolutely no denying it. No shame in it whatsoever.
Certainly I've got not. A bit more to lose here, Chris, but I'm still going to agree with you. It was everything, as you described that, it gets the hairs on your arms up. Like, you think back to everything about that day. And I've watched every highlight package on YouTube. I think there was a Clyde fan who used to burn it onto DVD and post it to anyone that wanted it free of charge.
I have actually uploaded the BBC highlights.
It's probably yours that I've watched.
In segments. And also, the entire match is also on YouTube as well. I think half the viewing figures are from myself, and I've had a few beers and a Friday, Saturday night. I'll just put it on, in the background, you know.
Super.
The whole thing was it was Roy Keane this, Roy Keane that. And I get it. Obviously, what he was at Man United and as a footballer in the 90s, he was this icon for the biggest football club in the world at that time. And he came to Scotland, albeit he was in mid-30s, 35, 36, I think he was. And many people just expected him to come up and boss every game, but especially his first game. He was up against kids. And I don't know if it's sometimes maybe lost on maybe those that don't know a lot about that match is, but that team was basically created just 6 months before. We started that season with two signed players. We held what was referred to in the press as X-Factor style trials, where they basically just put out ads in paper saying, do you want to play for a football? What people done? We had hundreds of trialists through the summer that were whittled down to a squad of footballers. And these were guys that were told from, like, some Motherwell, and various other clubs in the country, you're not good enough, you're not going to make it with us. And we took them on, Graham Roberts and Joe Miller, who done wonders with them, and basically said, go prove every last one of them wrong. Go make them eat their words. And boy, did they do it. They really did.
I think it's worth noting, though, that season we played Man United in a pre-season friendly. Yeah. At Broadwood, and Alex Ferguson brought his stars up.
Ronaldo and all, it was everyone.
Ronaldo had just signed for them. He never actually played in that game, but he was in the squad. He was there.
I remember him warming up and going, who's that?
Van der Sar, Ferdinand, Van Nistelrooy, Scholes, Giggs, the full shebang was up. And they scored. We could beat 5-1, right? But Neil McGregor scored.
It was 3-1
Astra Mash.
One point.
Yeah. And we also played Rangers at Ibrox in the League Cup. just before that Celtic game.
Two, three months before.
We were what, 17, 16 minutes away from knocking them out. We were 2-1 up, and then Paul Jarvie let it through his legs, and there we get scalped in extra time. But for that, we had Man United, we had Rangers. So playing Celtic in the Cup at Broadwood, we were no strangers to a big occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the squad, the average age of that squad that played, started against Celtic was 22. Alex Williams, striker, he was 22 years old. He was the oldest outfield player at the start of that game. So I think that also just shows, it kind of goes on to the point that Paul was saying about at the start of the season, the trials.
Mm-hmm.
It just shows what can be done.
Really
if does. You put the effort in and you have an eye for picking out talent.
Now, I've got to ask,
there was hundreds of players that turned up. How can you whittle that down and dig out a squad of 18, say, that can knock out Celtic? Yeah. It's incredible.
You're quite right. Go ask you though, guys, you know, I can only imagine how electric the atmosphere was that day in the ground. And how does it compare to the atmosphere you got at games before the lockdown period kicked in?
It's a tough one. The last season was a bit, it was a stop-start nature in the sense that we were okay for one or two games and then we went on a poor run. So the atmosphere was a bit up and down. But the one thing about Clyde fans, I would say, is that, we'll get annoyed and we'll get frustrated like every other fan of any football club. But I don't think I'm being biased when I say this. And a couple of our players have actually mentioned it on the podcast when we've had them on, is that at any club that they've been in the lower leagues in Scotland, they've never experienced a backing from fans like they do with the Clyde fans home and away. We pride ourselves in being vocal. Chris, I believe you're part of the Glasgow branch, who are the kind of single biggest kind of collective of Clyde fans. And they travel and back the boys, obviously, incredibly vocally, as we all do. But obviously, those guys are quite organised with it as well. So they put on, like, they've got cracking flags that they'll get out. And we try our best to create an atmosphere, which in an 8,000 seater stadium, when your average crowds are, say, 700-800, it's difficult. It is difficult.
So would you say the atmosphere on that day against Celtic was the best you've had it at that stadium?
Undoubtedly. No, I mean, just, it was incredible. As I said, even just thinking back to that day, it gets the goosebumps. Like, just thinking about it, everything about it. I remember the second goal, and I remember starting to celebrate at the top of the stairs. I was three rows from the back, and I actually sat in those exact seats. It was the first day, because it was all ticketed, and I was only like four rows back from where I would normally sit. But since that day, I have to sit in that seat at every home game. I don't care if hospitality are there, I'm sitting in my seat, because that's where I sat when we beat Celtic. But when we scored that second goal, I ended up from three rows to the back to the front, and I don't remember how I got there. It's just out of body experience is the only way I can describe it. And the only thing that's came close since was Ali Love's winning penalty when we got promoted just like 2 years ago now, nearly 2 years ago. And there was just shy of 3,000 that day, but when that ball hit the net, I'm sure Chris will agree.
I couldn't watch that. Watch it.
No?
Oh. I had my back turned to the pitch. I couldn't watch it.
It was gut-wrenching, but it was fantastic. Just magnificent.
Now, I've got to ask you, I mean, you say when you were talking about Roy Keane there, it just got me thinking. It's not just required now. When I talk to some of the other clubs as well, you know, what do you think about this, you know, the attitude in particular in the English press and perhaps amongst English football fans towards Scottish football, do you feel that it is underestimated and, you know, treated negatively? Because we do see a number of English guys, Joey Barton one that comes to mind as well, who come up north and fall flat on their face and, you know, sort of tootle off quite quickly.
I think that it's not just the English kind of press and media or English football fans that are down in Scottish football. I think we are too. I think in general, we are too harsh in our own game in this country. Now, I'm not going to say that you'll see football that's going to be played at the Bernabeu or the New Camp or anything like that, but the product on the park is bloody entertaining, quite frankly, at times. I mean, it's madness. It's utter madness, but it's great. And I think sometimes you've just got to sell what it is. Watch Scottish football. It's just a bit crazy. Like, you're never really sure what you're going to get. Like, and that's not just like looking at Old Firm games. Peterhead fans will probably get a story or two for you. I'm sure there was a game recently where the Peterhead goalkeeper took out a seagull for a goal kick. Like, I mean, I think you would only get that in Scottish football. And to me, perhaps in a more serious note, yeah, I do think it's maybe harshly critiqued. Is it fantastic football? No, in the sense of the purest. You're not going to get tiki-taka and all that kind of stuff. But is it good football? Yes, it is. If I had the choice to watch Crawley Town against Mansfield, forgive my ignorance here if they're not in the same league, or Hearts versus Dunfermline, I would watch Hearts versus Dunfermline. Would I expect the football to be equal? Probably, yeah. Yeah. Any kind of lower league English football that I've watched, I've never been like, oh, wow, they're fantastic. When you see some of the kind of cup performances, it's obviously playing up to maybe the conditions and TV cameras and the likes, but I do think it's not just a out with Scotland issue. I think us as a nation need to be better at promoting our game.
Now, I mean, the club itself, you've won some awards for the work you do, don't you? Or have done in the past. The programme in particular, I mean, how many years did you win the award?
I think it was nearly 20. Something. I think it was nearly 20 for the divisional award. I think for the overall Scottish one, it's been maybe there's been maybe one season where we didn't win it. But again, the two awards kind of ran side by side, and both are won by Clyde for majority of the last 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
And what's actually in it?
It's basically, it's a 64-page. It's. I wouldn't even just say it's a programme. I would say it's more a
book.
Like a football weekly. So see, you've got, I mean, I don't know if like your big clubs in England have it, but like, say, so you've got your Celtic View and your Rangers News. It's probably more like that, but it's not just Clyde-focused as well. There's a lot of just general football content in it. There's overseas pages. And I think that I don't want to just say this because I do write for it as well, but there's a lot of opinion pieces as well. And it's not just about Clyde. It could be about anything. So I've got a bit, but mine's is all about on-the-field matters at Clyde. So I need to write up 500 words on why we get cuffed by Falkirk 3-0. Which is always fun, that kind of thing. But at the same time, there's maybe four pages designated to the visitors. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, by all means, I would say subscribe to it, because I think if you love football, you would love reading the Clyde View. And that's taking my blinkered, the red, white and glass, red, white and black glasses off and all that. It's a fantastic read. It really is.
That's good to know. Is it available online or anything like that these days?
Yes. I might need to send you a link off. It would be good to do some promo on this podcast, but I can't remember the name of the app and I'm going to get shot for this. So go to the Clyde website, and if you go to Match Day, there'll be a link for the programme where it can be downloaded. And I think the downloadable version's £2.50. I believe. If it's not, again, please don't chase me. Normally it's £3 on a Match Day, which is probably one of the more expensive programs, but it's worth every penny. It's just top notch.
That's cool. Can I ask guys, by the way, because I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here, but with regards to COVID times and lockdown times, what are the sort of the services and the access that the club has provided during that? Now, I'm thinking there is the programme still going out on a weekly basis and the streaming and things like that? What's the club been doing during this difficult period?
So, yeah, with regards to the programme, it still is being produced. So it can be purchased and sent in its usual kind of magazine format. Excuse me. However, they do... Due to the COVID issues ongoing, you do have this downloadable version, which is the exact same content. It's just you can watch it, you read it on your phone instead, which is good because it still gives that additional income on top of the kind of streaming costs, etc. as well. So it's not ideal. I think if you're a program buyer like myself, I like to look back on them from time to time. I wouldn't say I'm a collector, but I like to keep the ones from the big games. I prefer having that kind of magazine that you can always look back, or if you're a bit of an autograph geek like I was back in the day, running up and getting it signed by your favourite player. Nothing quite like that.
It was a must, wasn't it? It certainly was. And so the club have been providing the streaming links. So has it been successful, Chris?
Yeah, although there was one, the first game of the season we played Thistle at Broadwood, a much anticipated match. I think the fixtures were released about 3 months or so before the game actually took place, and there was all the sort of hoo-ha, will fans be allowed in? What's going to happen with all that? Who's going to divvy out the tickets? Who's going to get tickets? Who's not? Of course, it turned out nobody was actually allowed in. But no, there was a group of Partick Thistle fans who, I don't know how they done it, but they streamed it on their own Facebook page. So it was a pay-per-view, so it was, I think it's £10-12 for the stream. So one person bought it, and then I think there was something like 300 of them watched it via that for nothing, and obviously I've done Clyde out a bit of money. So that was a real kick in the teeth. We got the last laugh, we beat them, so things well ends well. But aside from that, Clyde used the Pixalot platform, which a lot of Scottish clubs, especially in the World Leagues, have been using as well. A lot of clubs have had issues with it. There was one in particular, I think it was Inverness. So Pixalot, it's a camera that's not personally, manned. It sort of just follows the white thing on the pitch. So it's just got an automated camera, it just sort of pans left to right. However, the linesman in that Inverness game was bald. So therefore, the camera just focused on him. So the camera's following the linesman go up and down the line, and no one could see what's happening on the actual pitch. So I think that was a teething problem that other clubs have had. But for Clyde, I think all the streams I've watched, it's been pretty bang on, to be honest.
Although, given the fact that we were getting thumped by Peterhead at home at the time, maybe it wasn't so bad. But the camera picked up a rogue plastic bag in the wind, and it literally just, it was kicking about at, I think, Peterhead's goalkeeper's feet, And that was it. That was for like 3-4 minutes. It was just focused on that Tesco carrier bag, which, considering we were probably getting pinned in 90 yards up the other end, was sweet relief, quite frankly.
It was more entertaining than actually what was on the pitch, yeah.
Now, guys, you mentioned earlier sort of the problems the club had when they first moved to Cumbernauld. Chris, you mentioned about, you know, the club not interacting with your school back in the noughties. What's it like today, shall we say? Does the club engage better with the community now? Do you think they've learned the lessons of yesteryear? And is that sort of community interaction stronger now, or is it still a bit of a problem?
I think Paul's probably better equipped to answer that, but I know for a fact that we do like camps, summer camps, you know, out of school time camps. I mentioned his name earlier, Tom Elliott is in charge of that. And from what I've read, from what I know, it has been a success, and it has been long overdue. As I said, it's not something that I've really experienced or was able to actually participate in myself growing up. But yeah, I think for the more sort of intricate details, Paul's the man to ask there.
He's picked you up now, man.
Yeah, I know, and I'm going to have
don't let us down, Paul. Don't let us down.
Because my wife is on the board for the Clyde Foundation. So if I get any of this wrong, I'm going to get a firm kick in the nether regions. So
you know she's asked for the file before we send it live.
I wouldn't put it past her either. right. So yeah. The club basically has its own charitable arm, so the Clyde Community Foundation. So Clyde are a CIC, which basically just stands for Community Interest Club, which basically just means we're fan-owned, for want of a better word, or kind of member kind of structure. And as a result of that, we also have to basically prove that we are doing our best as an entity to better people's lives and using football at the heart of that. Now, the foundation is headed up by Tom Elliott, as Chris mentioned, who I think's worked for various clubs in Scotland, I believe Falkirk more recently. He's been a fantastic asset for the foundation, has delivered countless different projects. To name a few, excuse me, you have Clyde United. Clyde United are the club's mental health football team. So that's anyone that is obviously struggling, and it doesn't just need to be someone with a diagnosed condition. If you just maybe feel that getting on the football pitch would help you, you're more than welcome to go and join these guys. And they play against other kind of like-minded teams. Excuse me for a second.
No problem, mate.
On top of that, we have the Clyde Power Chair team. So I'm not sure if you're aware of what the kind of power chair stuff is. It's essentially wheelchair football is probably how I would best describe it. Our power chair team is very, very successful. They qualified for the European Championships, which were due to take place, believe, summertime 2020. I'm just taking my line from my wife's in the... She must have heard the foundation chat kicking off, so she's... 2020, dear. Yeah, so unfortunately...
We've got COVID, the thumbs up.
The thumbs up, I'm good to go. Get pushed back, obviously, due to COVID. So hopefully they do get the chance to represent not just the club, but themselves in that front. Chris also mentioned the camps and stuff like that. So we've got Easter camps, summer camps, and they're open to anyone. Any kid, different age groups go along. First team players are there, and they're very, very popular. And it's good to see, because we get these kids along on match days as well. They can be ball boys or ball kids, should say, mascots, stuff like that. So they are learning. I would still say there's work to be done. There's always work to be done. You can't rest on it as a football club. You always have to be looking to get new fans in.
Simple. I think from Clyde's point of view as well, with it being a relatively new relationship, if you like, with the community, Clyde, you know, just joined in 1994, coming to Cumbernauld, you need to kind of offer something, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch with the local community. And as I said earlier, it's not something that I saw as a child growing up. So I think it is really important. I also think that Clyde's relationship with North Lanarkshire Leisure, who are the landlords of Broadwood Stadium, that relationship has probably been at its best that it's ever been since we moved there.
Never been better, yeah.
This is the perfect time to kind of jump on the back of that and offer more to the community, more to the local children who, you know, maybe at a loose end, they see Celtic Rangers, you know, they say they'll support them or whatever. But I think it's important to offer them something that maybe Celtic or Rangers won't offer them at their front door, so to speak.
This
thing I would say is, see if we offered just a 6-7-year-old, say Celtic fan, the opportunity to be a mascot at a Clyde game, free of charge, I would challenge them not to want to come back, because the access that we give them, the experience that they get given, won't be close to what they could get, probably even at other clubs in our division. They get the red carpet treatment. They are literally in the dressing room with the players before, like, just kicking a ball about with them. I mean, it's fantastic. And that's the type of engagement that we've not had for a long time.
Well, you summed it up there with the word fantastic. You know, it's about putting the fan at the centre of everything that's going on. And when we talk about these programmes, it's putting the needs of the local people first and what the club can do to serve the needs of the local people, which, to quote a good friend of mine, Marco, it's about the relationship and the value of that the fan feels from the relationship, not just the value that the club can take from that relationship. And it's really good to hear those sorts of things going on. All right, guys, I've got to ask you, obviously, you know, for people who have never been to a Clyde game, what can they expect if they come and catch a game? You know, really sell it to us now. Let's see how many new followers we can get.
Well, I would say there are three pubs within walking distance, but all in different directions and all in different sort of modes of how to get there. So there's one, the closest one is just off the roundabout right next to the stadium. It's a stone house. I think it's part of a brand, you know, a Belhaven pub or a Wetherspoons, that sort of thing. But that's the closest to the ground, but it's not that fairly well thought of as a pre-match boozer, you know, before you go to the game. It's more of a restaurant aimed at families, that sort of thing. But it is the closest one to the ground.
Have you got one where any of you guys sort of all make a point of going to before the game?
Well, the thing is, and this touches on a few points we've spoke about already, a lot of Clyde's support is from here, there and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have your Cumbernauld-based guys like myself, like Paul. You'll have guys still from Rutherglen coming, guys from Castlemilk, guys from East Kilbride.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a sort of one meeting point before home matches. The meeting point is the stadium, almost. But in terms of pre-match, there's a group of older Clyde fans. They're known as the Railway Children, which is another story entirely. They drink in a pub called Smiddy, which is maybe a 10-15 minute walk tops from the stadium, but it's in what's known here as a scheme. So it's just like a housing estate, basically, in Eastfield, which is where I grew up personally. It's a Belhaven pub, but it's a good meeting place, you know, for fans. And if you go to the other side, in Kindorrett, there's a pub called what's it called?
It's memorable.
It's my actual local buff. Broden's Bar, that's it, yeah.
Must mean then.
I'd have been barred if they've known. I've forgotten that. Yeah, Broden's. That's definitely it. Yeah, that's a more traditional old man's pub.
They sound beautiful.
That's good.
It does
the business. It does the business, and it's a fairly straight 5-10 minute walk from the ground. So it does the business. That's where I go personally for home matches.
Ah, that's good. Then you must have some decent banter inside the ground as well, hey Paul?
Yeah, that's probably what I would say. Unfortunately, I don't get to drink in match days because I'm normally on duty at the ground. So they don't tend to like mascots that are drunk.
That's why I've never been asked.
I need to be sober for that. The atmosphere, I would say, I don't think I've been to many Clyde games where I haven't had a good laugh at one point. It's just something said. Now, vast majority, completely not repeatable on a recorded podcast. But I genuinely do think we've got some of the best comedians in our fan base. Whether they're aware that they're as funny as they actually are, I doubt. But I do think that the fans make the Broadway experience, because it can be tricky to give it a big sell. I mean, it's difficult ground to get to, which I think is the main feedback that we get from fans. And even for locals, it's relatively difficult to get to. There's not much in the way of bus services. Mm-hmm. The station is a fair jaunt unless you're youthful. That side of things, once you get to the ground, I think you have a pretty decent time.
Ah, that's cool.
Well, in comparison to other stadiums in the lower leagues of Scottish football, people criticise, or other fans, shall I say, criticise Broadwood for what it is, you know, a massive sort of Lego stadium. But you go to some other grounds in the lower leagues and it's... The facilities just horrendous. The view from where you are, it is kind of old school, and that's fine. That's respectful.
That's more the issue.
Exactly. But you got a perfect view of this pitch, you know, perfectly kind of modern sort of stadium. But Paul was touching on the sort of travel arrangements there. People do moan at that, but there is, you do have the Craig Lynn interchange that serves buses from Glasgow primarily, if you're talking from away fan sake. And Croy Station, it's not that far away. It's basically a straight walk. I suppose you kind of have to know, and suppose myself, lived in Cumbernauld all my life, it doesn't seem much to me, you know, but it's not the hardest place in the world to get to. And I do think people give Broadwood a bit of a hard time for what it actually is. And it's not as bad as what people think.
You know,
that's me talking Clyde up. You know?
I think we need to put our foot down and just tell away fans to get a grip.
Definitely. I've got to say, gents, I'm looking forward to my visit when all of this is over. I've got to say, sold me when you mentioned Belhaven, though. So that's all I need. That's all I need to hear, and I'm set. I'm settled with that.
The Smiddy is there now.
I've got to ask though one final one before we go, though. Ask you one pick each. Which away day do you look forward to the most?
You want to go first, Chris, or will I take it?
I think in previous years, if we're talking about the last maybe 5 to 10 years, the big away day that everyone used to look forward to, and this is just purely for a day out on the beer one, yeah, is definitely Annan Athletic. We were in the same league as Annan for, well, until we beat them in the playoff final. that was the main one, because we had it all set out. You got the 12 minutes past 10 train from Glasgow Central to Annan. And before that, you had 12 minutes to get to buy the beer, because the off-sale license is between 10 o'clock in the morning till 10 at night. But if you'd forgot to buy your beer before the game, you had 12 minutes to get from the co-op on right next door to Central Station. You had 12 minutes to get to that, to get on the train. And if you missed that train, then you've had it. The next one's in like 2 or 3 hours. And the train journey itself takes 2 hours, so you've got a good 2 hours swallowing on the train. You get to Annan at 12 o'clock, straight in. You're talking about a throw-in lens away from the station bar. Straight in there. And then there's a kind of straight sort of walk. You go walk down, and then turn right, and then there's a pub called The Shed, which was notorious for selling very cheap beer.
It's specials, wasn't it? It was like kind of weekly specials they'd done.
Oh, that was an incredible place. And then again, it's just another 10 minutes walk to the ground. Mm-hmm. And Annan's ground, it's very simple, but very, very good for that level. Again, you've got one kind of seated stand, maybe holds about 800 or so. And then behind the two goals, just terracing. And that was just the best place to make an atmosphere.
That's cool.
That's cool. Obviously, you would do the kind of reverse on the way back via the pubs onto the train and home
obligatory.
But for away days, I think that would be my answer. Yeah.
Go on then.
Yeah, you've stole my thunder there, Chris. Because I would have to say Annan away. Now, granted, I didn't tend to do much drinking on the away days as much as some of the other boys. I can't handle it in my age, but Annan. Even if I was driving down, it's still just a cracking away day. The atmosphere as well. When the boys were heading back from the shed to the ground, if you were already inside the ground, they would be hundreds of yards away, but you could hear every last word that they were singing. And then that got the buzz of the boys that were already in the stand. And especially when we played them in the playoff final, that was a Tuesday night in the first leg. And I think quite a few of the boys had maybe been drinking since about 7 in the morning. But the looks of them when they got. But I'm looking at you, Chris.
I remember it was a very, very sunny afternoon. The Hootenanny pub in Glasgow City Centre. We've been in there since 11, 12, I'd like to say. The game kicked off at what, 7:45?
The atmosphere down that day was fantastic. I remember one away day, it was a Boxing Day. I think we won 3-2. It was a great game, but it was limbs. I think we went 3-1 up. My wife came home with a black eye. Like, it was just bodies everywhere. And it's Clyde versus Annan in League 2. Mm-hmm. It was a mid-table match, and there was just limbs everywhere. It was fantastic. And yeah, I would say that's probably the only thing I miss about League 2, the away day to Annan.
Yeah. Well, it's nice there, guys. You put Annan on the scoreboard. You know, you're the first ones to mention Annan. So all credit to you. Now,
I'm fully expecting when you have the Annan podcast that they're going to say Clyde's the best away day. I think that's the agreement that we're going to have to make.
you've signed that one up there. So we'll
either not, you can just edit everything that we've just said.
Just dub it like Partick Thistle or something over it. Have that as a soundbite just in case.
All right then, guys. Hey, listen, it's been a real pleasure today. I've enjoyed it so much. It's been great fun. So thank you so much for giving me your time. I would say I really do appreciate it. For people who want to follow you guys, a bit after this and follow the fortunes of Clyde. Is there any way, anywhere they can follow you on from the social media side of things?
Yeah, so obviously out with the official Clyde FC Twitter, you can follow the on and off field fortunes of Clyde Football Club by getting to listen to these dulcet tones every Friday at the Clyde FC podcast. And you can basically follow that just through the same Twitter handle at Clyde FC podcast, or by following A State of Mind. And we stream, as I say, live every Friday at 7 PM UK time. So, yeah, that's basically that.
Cheers. Thanks for that, Paul. And Chris?
I have to mention the Glasgow branch. Clyde supporters, as Paul mentioned earlier, we are a good 140, 150 members strong. Mm-hmm. Which, if you consider Clyde have a kind of average crowd of 700-800 on a home match, it is a decent sized proportion of the support. However, I would say it is a sort of members sort of based. We do run, I myself have organised Player of the Year events, where the Clyde players have turned up to, and we give them awards and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you'd like to become a member, just get in touch. There is a Facebook group. It's a £10 for the yearly membership. You get a commemorative pin badge with that as well, and you also get access to the fundraising stuff that we do race nights, and as I say, Player of the Year nights, and all sorts of merchandise, that kind of stuff as well. So if you're a bit more serious, if you would like to become a more serious member of the Clyde support in terms of the vocal side and active side of off the field, then definitely get in touch with that.
Sounds great. Thanks for that. Let's say, gents, it's been a real pleasure tonight. And those of you at home, that's it for us today. It's been a great experience, as always, learning a bit more about all the wonderful goings-on in Scottish football. It's been a brilliant journey so far. I'm looking forward to my next stop off on this adventure that I'm on. Till next time, I'm Adam at UkraFoot24. You can follow me on all the social medias, and as good old Adam Pate myself on LinkedIn. Till next time, everyone, take care for now.